So today we're talking about handling transitions. And I had had this scheduled for a few weeks. I didn't quite know if we'd be announcing kind of our next phase for our church this week or not, but all of us are going through transitions. There's plenty of things that each one of us are going through that in the last few months, a lot has changed. And now that things are maybe opening up and we can do some things again, it's not the same. And so I wanted to look at, what does that look like to have transitions? What does it look like to go through change? And what's a biblical example and some best tips and practices that we can learn from the Bible about how to handle transitions? And that's something that each one of us are going to have to go through. Some of us have gone through a lot in terms of maybe working from home or now looking for different work or trying to figure out how to make ends meet or having kids home from school. And different things with church and family and a lot of routines have been changed. So how do we handle change? How do we handle transitions? How do we make sure that as we go through that, we're not losing who we are or losing what we want to do? So change is difficult. So how do we handle that? And so today we're going to look at some Bible stories. And again, if you've noticed, Dan and I over the last few months, especially since we've been on Zoom, it's all been about, what do people need to hear right now? What's a message that's going to resonate with people right now? And then we're basing it all in the Bible. And so the Bible has had tremendous answers for us and examples for us throughout this whole thing. So you'd think, what does the Bible have to say about what's happening in 2020 with pandemic and racial things happening and everything else that's changing economically? What does the Bible have to say about that? And week by week, we've been able to share Bible stories and Bible verses that can help us, encourage us, lead us, guide us. And that continues today as we look at some Bible stories. So we're going to look at some Old Testament patriarchs and some of the transitions that they had in their lives. And instead of jumping around, I had a few different people. I wanted to look at Abraham. I wanted to look at Joseph. And I wanted to look at Moses. And I was going to jump around in Genesis and in Exodus. But then I remembered that in the book of Acts, if you remember, there's a character named Stephen who's filled with the Holy Spirit and he's kind of leading a group that's, you know, feeding the widows and he's doing all these great works for the Lord. And then the Jewish leaders capture him and he's actually the first martyr. But before that, he has this great summary of some of the history of some of Israel's patriarchs. And so he actually covers a lot what I want to do. So we'll kind of cover what Stephen says in Acts chapter 7. And hopefully you remember some of these Old Testament stories as we go through looking at some of these key figures of the Old Testament and the transitions and how they handle these big changes in their lives. So let's jump into that. So we'll start in Acts chapter 7. And Stephen said, and this is again, it's in front of the kind of Jewish council. Brothers and fathers, hear me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran. And he said to him, go out from your land and from your kindred, and go into the land that I will show you. And he went out from the land of the Chaldeans and lived in Haran. And after his father died, God removed him from there into this land in which you are now living. Yet he gave him no inheritance in it, not even a foot's length, but promised to give it to him as a possession and to his offspring after him, though he had no child. God spoke to this effect, that his offspring would be sojourners in a land belonging to others, who would enslave them and afflict them 400 years. But I will judge the nation that they will serve, said God, and after that they shall come out and worship me in this place. And he gave him the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham became the father of Isaac and circumcised him on the eighth day. And Isaac became the father of Jacob, and Jacob the 12 patriarchs. And so if you remember the story of Abraham, we tend to remember kind of the rest of his story about, you know, after hearing God's promise, how we tried to fill that out and not having a kid and all his adventures and kind of misadventures along that ride. But we sometimes forget that he had that original call, that he was just living his life. And then God told him, you know, take all your stuff, take your whole family and move to this place you've never been, a place that I'll show you. And so imagine that transition. Imagine that you have this plan for your life and you think, I'm going to live here. I'm going to do this work. I've got my family here. And then God says, no, you're going to do something completely different. That, and I'm going to kind of uproot you right now, and you're going to go somewhere else. And then these tremendous promises of, I'm going to make you this great nation and all these things. Just imagine that transition for Abraham, that he has to kind of just uproot everything and change his entire life, maybe different plans than what he had before. And maybe some of you have had something similar where you had a plan for your life and then God changed that and brought you into something new and different. And with Abraham, the key thing that we learn from him is that he remains faithful and that he had these promises, but these promises weren't fulfilled right away. He had to wait. He had to have faith that God was going to ring true in those promises. And then we know, and it said it in there, that son came. So him and Sarah were waiting for that son who finally came in Isaac. And so during transitions, especially big ones like Abraham, we remain faithful. And that's one of the key things that you'll see throughout this sermon is that in the midst of all these things, God's there. Though our lives are going to change, our circumstances are going to adapt and transition, but God is there. So we have a God who is unchanging, who's going to be there for us. And so whenever we go through transitions, we turn to him. So everything can be swirling around us, but we have something that remains constant right in front of us, and that's the Lord. And so Abraham, although he had, you know, different, you know, lapses in his faith and had, you know, different things where he tried to do it his own way, but in the end, he believed in what God had for him. And that led to, you know, his faith and also led to the promises that God had with the birth of a nation with him. So let's continue on. So let's jump back into what Stephen, this is going to continue what Stephen's speech had. He was talking about Abraham, and then he moves back to talk about Joseph. And the patriarchs, jealous of Joseph, and if you remember now, your, you know, Old Testament, you have Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then Jacob, 12 sons, one of which is Joseph. And the patriarchs, jealous of Joseph, sold him into Egypt, but God was with him and rescued him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom before Pharaoh, king of Egypt, who made him ruler over Egypt and over his household. Now there came a famine throughout all Egypt and Canaan, and great affliction, and our fathers could find no food. But when Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent out our fathers on their first visit. And on the second visit, Joseph made himself known to his brothers, and Joseph's family became known to Pharaoh. And Joseph sent and summoned Jacob, his father, and all his kindred, 75 persons in all. And Jacob went down to Egypt, and he died, he and our fathers. And they were carried back to Shechem and laid in the tomb that Abraham had bought for a sum of silver from the sons of Hamor in Shechem. And so if you remember the story of Joseph, this is quite a, you know, great story that happens in the end of Genesis. So you have Joseph who has these dreams about his brothers kind of bowing down to him. His brothers don't like that very much. So they plan to kill him, but they kind of change their plan to the last second to sell him into slavery. And so think of that just immediate transition that you're growing up in your family, you have these brothers, you have this family around you, and then they betray you and they sell you off to be a slave. So just imagine that transition and what that what would feel like, just kind of your whole life kind of ripped away and the people you thought had your back don't. And then he's then a slave in Egypt. If you remember the story, he's in Potiphar's household. He's a slave there, but he works his way up. That he does excellent work and he kind of moves in his way up the ranks, and then he ends up kind of running the whole household. And it said that God kind of blesses everything that he does. And then again, if you remember the story, Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him and he didn't fall for that. And so then Potiphar's wife kind of lied about what Joseph was doing. So Joseph was sent into prison. And so while he was in jail, we see this same thing again, that he starts taking on responsibilities. In the end, he's in some ways kind of running the whole jail there. And then he has a few dreams that he interprets. And then one of those ends up being in front of Pharaoh and reminds Pharaoh when he's searching for someone who can interpret dreams that Joseph can. I said, then Joseph in front of the most powerful person on earth at that time probably interprets the dream. And in that sense, kind of saves a generation. And saves his own family in the process, who may have, you know, died or starved in that famine, that there was, you know, 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. And so Joseph prepared for that. And he was second in command of all of Egypt, probably the most powerful empire at the time. And so he's a very powerful person. So you have these huge transitions throughout. and some of the key things that, we learned from him is that he uses his strengths. So God gave him gifts of, you know, interpreting dreams, of kind of planning, administration, leadership, so that wherever he was, he said, I'm going to make the best of it. I'm going to do my best in this situation. So whether that was as a slave, whether it was as a prisoner, or whether that was a leader of an empire, he made the most of it. And he was a leader. And he had this great kind of administrative quality to him. And one of the things that I was thinking about this story is that when we look at Joseph, we see just his whole story, basically his whole life story in just a few chapters in Genesis. And I wish there was some sort of diary or journal of what he was going through during those times, because there had to be times where he was disheartened, where he was afraid, where he was angry, where he was depressed. We don't see that. So obviously when your family betrays you and sells you off, or you're a slave and you're trying to, you know, obey a master you've never done before, or now you're in prison because someone lied about what you did. In each one of those things, we don't get to see kind of the emotion there. We don't get to see his frustration. We don't get to see where he doubts. But in each one of those, we don't know if it was days, weeks, months, years, but somehow he got out of that and he made the best of each one of those situations. And that's, you know, part of the reason that the big story of Israel, of being able to return to that land, was what Joseph did. So in that, he summoned his strengths. He kind of worked his way through whatever he was dealing with, and God blessed him in that. And he found ways to hold true to God in all of those different things. So it's a kind of a tremendous story for us that we won't have to go through something that dramatic probably in our lives. So in our small changes, how can we summon our strengths? How can we maybe process our emotions in that? But then also say, how can God use me in this setting right now? So tremendous story there. And then if we go back, now to continuing Stephen's speech. So he has this long speech. We looked at Abraham, we looked at Joseph, and now we can look at Moses. But at this time, as the promise drew near, God had granted to Abraham, the people increased and multiplied in Egypt until there arose over Egypt another king who did not know Joseph. He dealt shrewdly with our race and forced our fathers to expose their infants so that they would not be kept alive. At this time, Moses was born. And he was beautiful in God's sight, and he was brought up for 3 months in his father's house. And when he was exposed, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. He was mighty in works and deeds. When he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brothers, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them being wrong, he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian. He supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not understand. On the following day, he appeared to them as they were quarreling and tried to reconcile them, saying, "Men, you are brothers. Why do you wrong each other?" But the man who was wronging his neighbor thrust him aside, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" At this retort, Moses fled and became an exile in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. Now, when 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai in the flame of fire in a bush. When Moses saw it, he was amazed at the sight. As he drew near to look, there came a voice of the Lord. "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob." And Moses trembled and did not dare to look. And the Lord said to him, "Take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their groaning, and I have come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send you to Egypt." And so you probably know the rest of the story that happened there. So again, Moses, tremendous transitions as he's going through. So it starts out that he's born to this, you know, Jewish family in Egypt, and then, you know, most likely would have been killed, except for Pharaoh's daughter finding him and raising him. And so he's living in the palace as a prince in Egypt, again, powerful nation, probably the most comfortable and luxurious life that it was available at the time. He's living in that palace in Egypt, and he lives there for 40 years. So he gets to be like 40 years old, and that's when he kills that Egyptian and then has to flee. And then his life changes dramatically. So being a powerful person with riches and probably servants and whatever he would want, power and authority. And now he's fleeing, and he ends up kind of in the middle of nowhere. And he runs into Jethro, and then he marries Jethro's daughter, Zipporah, and he has sons. But kind of this, in this period of his life, he's just a shepherd, that he has his flocks that he's moving around. So just this quiet period in his life. And he does that for another 40 years. And then there's the burning bush. And then God's kind of calling him out of that, saying, hey, I want you to lead my people out of slavery in Egypt. And if you remember that story, Moses is a little hesitant, saying, is there anybody else? You know, maybe I'm not the right guy for this. Maybe you want someone else. But God continues to show him sign after sign. And Moses kind of understands that, even though throughout this whole process, he's fairly reluctant. God kind of shows him the way and kind of proves time and time again that he has chosen Moses and that he's with Moses. And then you probably know the rest of the story, that Moses goes down and the 10 plagues and then leaving Egypt. And then you have this another period of Moses' life where he's just leading this whole big group of people, and all the frustrations of leading this, you know, grumbling group, and all the different things that they have, you know, the obstacles they're facing in the 40 years in the desert. And so you have these periods of 40 years for Moses that are all different and all changing. But in each one of those, God had a plan for him. God had him learn. God had him grow. And God was there, kind of directing his path. And sometimes he was reluctant in that, but he did it, and he led his people out. So again, another story of these huge transitions, but God using that to benefit the people and to benefit and move, kind of move forward what his plan was. So those are great stories from the Old Testament. And I want to cover just a few, you know, New Testament stories about Jesus. And Jesus had a few big transitions for himself too. So one of them was when he started his ministry. So Jesus, we remember all the, you know, birth stories of the Christmas story. We remember that. And then for the most part, we fast forward until he's 30 years old. We have that one story when he's 12 in Jerusalem, but we kind of just fast forward until he's 30 years old. And so what we know about Jesus during that time, he lived with his family. He, you know, worked in some sort of kind of construction job. We say carpenter, but that word is probably more of a construction worker, maybe worked with stone and, you know, building, you know, houses or aqueducts or whatever. And he does that for majority of his life. But then he transitions into ministry. And before he does that, he's been baptized by John the Baptist. And then he spends, you know, 40 days in the desert. That's a time of preparation. That's a time of communion with God. That's a time of saying, how can I be ready for this? So even the Son of God says, I want to be ready for this. I want to prepare for a transition. That's also where he's tempted by the devil in that time as well. But in that, he kind of understands that there's a transition. I need to be prepared for that. I need to connect with God. I can't lose sight of that, this connection that I have with the Father. And the other time we see a major transition is right before Jesus is crucified. That night before, he spends time with his disciples. We have that Last Supper. And then they go to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. And there Jesus is showing his emotions. He's kind of crying out to God. And again, he understands there's this big transition coming. How do I commune with God? How do I connect with God in that? And so he kind of spends that time doing it. And then, you know, the rest of the story, the soldiers come, there's the trial, there's the execution of crucifixion, and then we have the resurrection. So there's just examples of Jesus and some of the transitions that he did and what he prepared for that. And if you look at the scriptures, there's story after story of where God helps people through big changes, help them through tragedies, help them through changes, help them through transitions. And that's kind of littered throughout the whole Bible, because that's just the story of human history. That's the story of our own lives. If we look back at our lives, we probably, the biggest moments that we remember are the transitions, are the, you know, graduating from high school, going off to college, starting your first job, getting married, having your first kid. Like, those are some of the key moments of when there's big transitions for us. Those are the key moments in our lives. And so it's not a surprise that when we look at the scripture, it's filled with all these transitions and God being there, because that's the story of each one of our lives as well. So I want to cover just a few kind of keys to how to handle transitions. And so these are keys to handle now. So things are changing. So things in your life may be changing in terms of work, in terms of what's happening with your kids, in terms of what you can do in your social life. Like, things are changing, and they're not going back to normal. They're going back to something new. And so it's not just where it was 6 months ago. It's now going to be something new and different. How do we handle that? So that's true for now, but any other big changes that we have in our lives, how do we handle those well using what we just saw as those examples as our model? So I want to talk about seven different things that are helpful to be thinking about as you go through transitions. So the first one is be in the now. When we go through transitions, one of the big things that happens to us is that we either want to focus on the past, saying, well, it was this way in the past, I like that better, or we get stuck focusing on the future. And we try to extrapolate, okay, this one change happened. Now, what does this mean for 2 months from now? What does this mean for 2 years from now? What does this mean for the rest of my life? We try and figure all this stuff out, but we'll never have enough information to really figure that out. And so we get lost either in the past and how things used to be but aren't anymore, or in the future that we try to predict what we can't. And each one of those is going to cause stress and anxiety, where sometimes we just need to be in the moment. So if things are changing, we can acknowledge that. We can acknowledge what the past looked like. We can maybe think about some things of planning for the future. We also just need to be in the now and say, this is what's happening now. This is the change that's happening. This is the transition that's happening. How can I understand that? How can I embrace that in the now? And then what's happening right now in front of me? What can I do? What can I tackle right now in front of me? So it's helpful to be in the now, because there's things maybe right now that you can just tackle that's right in front of you that can be handled in the now, instead of, you know, spending and kind of wasting your time focusing on what used to be in the past but is no longer, or trying to figure out all these details about the future that you won't be able to figure out. So be in the now. The next one is understand that change is part of life. None of us is going to go through the rest of our lives exactly the same thing that we're doing right now. And so things are going to change. Relationships are going to change. Jobs are going to change. Homes are going to change. You know, yeah, maybe you'll move to a different place in the country. Things are going to change and adapt. And so understand that that's going to be a constant for you. And so don't be surprised when things change. Sometimes we get to this mindset where I like the way that things are now, and we get upset and surprised every time something changes. But we should be acknowledging and understanding change is going to happen. And again, we saw that even, you know, 5,000 years ago in the stories of the Old Testament that we were talking about, change happens, transition happens. God, he leads people in different directions for his purposes. We have to understand that's going to be true for us too. So be prepared for that. Be mentally understanding that change is happening. I need to be prepared for that. It's not going to always stay the exact same. So to be ready and prepared for that. Change, it's just a part of life. The next one is summon your strengths. So in a time of transition, summon your strengths. And this is what we saw with Joseph in that story, is that no matter where he was, he used his God-given ability of, you know, being a great worker, kind of understanding how to plan, how to be a leader, how to direct and kind of run an organization. In each one of those things, he excelled because he kind of summoned his strengths. And that's the thing for us. So when we're amidst the transition, maybe it's right now, like, what are you good at? What has God gifted you with? What are the gifts and the talents and the passions that God has given to you? And then how do you use that now? How do you use that in the midst of a pandemic? How do you use that when you're transitioning from one thing to another? And maybe that's going to change. Maybe how you use your gifts or talents is going to change. Maybe you need to think creatively about what that needs to be different. But God's given you those things to use. And so don't shy away from that. Don't think that, okay, this thing's changing, and so all my experiences and all my gifts and talents that God's had for me, let's throw that away and try and start from scratch. No, maybe you adapt and change what God has given you to do something different. But summon your strengths that God has given each one of you. There's kind of these unique things about you. So in the midst of transitions, find that. Say, this is my strengths. So number one, you got to know them. So figure out what your strengths are if you don't already. And then in the midst of a transition, ask yourself, how can I use my strengths? What's the best way to use my strengths in this now changed environment? So summon your strengths. The next one is maintain self-care routines. And there's a lot that gets covered in this. One, because it's about health, it's about mental health, and it's also about our spiritual health. So in the midst of transitions, and maybe this was the case for you at the start of the quarantine, I know it was for me, is that there's this big transition, you don't know how to handle it, and so things start to slip in terms of, are you eating healthy? Are you spending time outside? Are you exercising? And so that was the case for me, not doing as much of those things. And then that leads to me not sleeping very well. Maybe that leads to increased stress. It's all those things kind of go into place. And so as we go through transitions, do those healthy things, those healthy habits of eating right, spending time outside, exercising, making sure you're getting enough sleep, drinking enough water, like all these kind of normal things we have to remember. And when we go through transitions, it's kind of slip. And we wonder, why do I feel terribly? Why do I have no energy? Why are these things kind of spiraling out of control? It's because we're not doing these kind of self-care things for ourselves. And so that's part of like the body part, but also what's the mental health part? Are we spending time kind of processing what's going on? Are we, you know, spending time kind of de-stressing? Are we spending our time, you know, doing things that we enjoy, being outside, reading a book? Are we finding those mental health breaks in what we're doing? Can't lose sight of that either. And then the other part is the spiritual part. What are those spiritual routines that kind of keep you grounded and keep you connected to God? Whether that's prayer or meditation or kind of quiet time with God, reading the Bible, those connect you to God and those kind of center you. And all those things with mind and body and spirit, all those things are connected. And so as we go through transition, we can kind of lose sight of each one of these things and it kind of just spirals out of control. And so we got to find ways to, how do I build those routines back in? And that's an important part of life in general, is kind of maintaining those great routines that keep us healthy in all those areas. But especially in terms of transition, when things are changing, we tend to miss some of those things. And so maintain those self-care things. The next one is use your support network. So reach out to people. Hopefully the church, that's one of our goals for our church, is that we can be that for one another. We can be a support to one another. But in times of change, don't be afraid to reach out. Don't be afraid to say, hey, this is what I'm going through right now. We tend to think that sometimes we have to go through things alone. So we have to go through things just individually, or, you know, this is what our family's going through and we just get through it, you know, just our family. But there's other people there, and there's extended family, and there's friends, and there's neighbors, and there's this church community. Rely on people around you. I think sometimes we think, oh, I don't want to bother them, or I don't want to, you know, they're busy. I don't want to, you know, get in their way. But you'll be surprised. People want to help. People want to help and people want to support you. And so just reach out. So when you're going through transitions, let people know. Let people be a support to you. Let people pray for you. Have some prayer warriors pray for you. You know, receive some ministry in that. And maybe, you know, you need a meal. Maybe you need a ride somewhere. Like, we have people who want to help and do those things. So reach out to people when you're going through transitions. The next one is embrace your emotions. This is one that's really important, that if we don't kind of embrace our emotions and feel the emotions that we're feeling, and I've talked to several people, and that's kind of, you know, there's this kind of roller coaster that's been happening the last few months of being up, being down, feeling optimistic, feeling pessimistic, feeling afraid, feeling anxious, feeling nervous, and all these different things. We can feel anger. We can feel all these different emotions, and in the midst of a change, you have to process that. You have to understand, what am I feeling? Why am I feeling it? And work your way through that. If you don't, then you bottle that up, and then that boils over into something that, you know, is an expression of emotion that you probably don't want to have in the wrong moment, or it comes out as anger. And so understand, you're going through change that's going to impact you emotionally, all right? None of us are robots. None of us can just go through life and have these big changes happen without it affecting us. It affects us. We have to understand that, embrace that. And so sometimes you're going to have down days. Sometimes you're going to have days, and Amberly and I have said that throughout this kind of quarantine time. It's like, I'm feeling really low energy today. Or you know, I'm just not really feeling, you know, myself today. And we have that. But we have those times. We have to process that. We have to process what we're feeling in those moments. It's a big thing for us. And that can be part of that support network too, of talking to people. This is what I'm feeling. This is what's going on. We can support one another. And that's the whole point of a community, that when I'm feeling down, maybe you're feeling up, and then vice versa. We can be there for one another. So embrace your emotions. It's okay to feel sad or uneasy or not knowing what's going to happen, because we don't. But process that and then rely on some of these other things to kind of get you back to a positive state. But don't kind of shuffle all those things down and not feel them. Feel those emotions in that time. And the last one is remember to laugh. All right. So yes, there's a pandemic, but we can still laugh. We can still find joy in life, that we have a God who's kind of gifted us with joy and happiness, even in the midst of struggle. That's one of those big themes of the Bible, is that people can go through tough things, but God still gives them joy. And so remember to laugh in this, okay, and in the pandemic, and then across any sort of change or transition, remember to laugh. Amberly makes me laugh several times every single day. And I love that about her, that she'll say something funny or she'll quote a funny show, and we'll laugh about it. And that brightens my day. And so find ways to do that. Tell your cheesy dad jokes, look at, you know, your stupid memes or whatever, things that make you laugh, like embrace those, do those things. Maybe it's watching a TV show or, you know, what a favorite comedy of yours, a movie, find ways to laugh. And there's an abundance of, you know, little, you know, puppy videos, kitten videos. You can find all that online. Find ways to laugh and smile, even in the midst of change. Don't lose sight of that. That was seven different things that just kind of help you out. And you've seen that, you know, in some of the stories of the Old Testament and with Jesus, we saw some of that. And so for us, don't lose sight of that. Don't lose sight of what God has for you. So as we go through transitions, as we're going to go through a transition now with, you know, meeting back in person, you know, kind of this hybrid system with our church, all these things, we there's unknowns, but there is one known, and that's God's with us. God is with us. So things are going to change around us. We're going to be unsure or uneasy, but God is there. And we saw that through all the stories we looked at today, that God's there, God's providing, God's helping. God, that solid foundation. And so for each one of us, rely on that. So when things are changing, understand that there's this big constant for you, that God is there, God is with you. So don't lose sight of that. And in the midst of that, we can overcome obstacles, we can go through transitions and be better on the other side. Maybe our circumstances aren't better, but we personally can be in a better spot because we trusted in God through that. So we do that together as a community, we do that together as a church, and we continue to do that to lead to where God has us to be. And that's, again, the stories of the Old Testament. It's leading to the people of God and their success, and that's what we can do here today, that we change, we adapt, we grow, and we trust in God to lead and guide us. So let me pray for us on that. Lord, I just ask that you would just be with us in our transition as a church of going back and meeting in the building and doing our hybrid of online and in the building. And Lord, I just pray for each and every person on the call for the changes that are going to happen that have already happened in their lives that they're still adjusting to and adapting to. Lord, would you just be with each and every one of us? Lord, send your Holy Spirit now for the times that we either can't process our emotions, we don't understand that. Allow us to just process those. Allow us to be in the now. Allow us to kind of summon the strengths that you've given us. Allow us to have joy and life and laughter in these times. And Lord, just lead us. Allow us to understand that while we feel like things are shifting sand below our feet, that it's actually not, that you're the rock that we can stand on. So allow us to feel that. Allow us to feel that firm foundation and allow us to move forward into new and maybe scary circumstances. Let us do that with your light and your power and your truth. Allow us to be advancing your kingdom into an unknown world. Allow us to be doing that, and allow us each to, in the midst of trials, in the midst of changes, to never lose sight that you're with us. You're with us through all of this, and we can rely on you. So Lord, give us that peace, give us that calm, give us that tranquility in the midst of a storm, that we can be with you and we can help one another and be advancing your kingdom. So we just ask for that this morning. We pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.